Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like now to welcome Eric Witt. He is Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Richardson, and Jim Farrell, Policy Advisor to Governor Richardson. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Hello. Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Great to have you. So, both of you are just back from a whirlwind trip around the state of New Mexico, conducting town hall meetings about the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, better known as the Economic Stimulus Package. First of all, let's talk for a moment about the stimulus package. Everybody's heard about it on the news. What's it really designed to do?
Well, we're going through the greatest economic crisis since the Great Depression by, you know, everyone's measure. We've had the markets have dropped more than 40% in less than a year. We've millions of Americans out of work. The real unemployment rate in the country today is probably around 15%. So, you know, this required a strong response from Congress and the president. And I think we got a pretty good one. $787 billion going out to the country in safety net programs and infrastructure building programs, everything under the sun. Here in New Mexico, we're getting about just over $3 billion all in for job creation, economic recovery, and also for investments, hopefully for the long term, and green jobs and things that will make us, you know, free from dependence on foreign oil, and cleaner and reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the future as well. We also, there's a big component, I should mention, of safety net programs in there. That's health care through Medicaid. That's unemployment benefits. That's funds into public school classrooms so that we don't lose teachers and cut programs there.
Now, those are things that already exist.
Yeah.
Those programs are things that already exist. So what are they, just putting it's easier to get that money now than it used to be. They're putting different requirements to get it, or how is that extra money being funneled into the programs?
The safety net portion of the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the safety net portions are Medicaid, funds for Medicaid, so that states don't have to put a lot of people today who get their health care, low-income people, and particularly kids, and low-income seniors take their health care away because of budget constraints that all states are feeling. And also unemployment benefits. I mean, Americans are losing their jobs at a rather terrifying rate today in this recession. And so one of the things that the act does is requires states, or offers the opportunity to states, not all states have accepted it, but we certainly have here, to increase unemployment benefits payments by $25 a week, to expand the period when you can draw the benefits, and also to liberalize the requirements to allow more people to get unemployment benefits in this economic crisis today. People who, you know, work part-time, who were previously ineligible for unemployment benefits. So, yeah, it was a strong safety net component, health care and unemployment benefits.
Safety net, I certainly believe in, and probably the vast majority of our listeners think a safety net is a good thing. How does it stimulate anything?
Well, I mean, the safety net portion, just take unemployment benefits. If people who are losing their jobs today in this economic crisis don't have money in their pocket to spend, that's going to have an economic impact. So that helps circulate funds, helps in the economy here in the state and in the country.
So even just basically basic food and rent and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when people stop spending money, which is what's happening, but if they do it, you know, very, very broadly, other people who have work today will lose their jobs, you know, as demand falls. But so that there is a stimulative effect of doing more unemployment benefits for folks, and that's one of the smaller items in this package in terms of its stimulative effect. The other components, which Eric and I were with the governor around the state on, are big infrastructure, road, bridge, highway projects that really employ people, hopefully at pretty good wages, and put them to work.
let's talk about those, Eric. Infrastructure programs. I know shovel ready is one of your favorite terms, one we've heard a lot, but having programs that are ready to go in the infrastructure is what part of what this program is about.
Yes, it is. Mary Charlotte, this is Eric speaking. That term I've worn out over the last 2 weeks. I hope never to utter it again.
But I uttered it for you.
You uttered it for me. But having said that, yeah, we're looking at projects that are ready to go, that are ready to put people to work right away. Like Jim said, the point of this economic stimulus package is to get the money deployed out into the communities immediately. So they don't want to wait for a year and a half or 2 years while you're planning a big...
Well, architects are drawing plans for something.
Exactly. And New Mexico in particular, we are very fortunate that we have very advanced planning for our highway systems, for our water systems in particular. So we were among the first states to receive money and put it out into the field on these construction projects, these infrastructure construction projects. And a lot of other states that are not ready will likely forfeit some, if not all, of the money that they were allocated, which will then revert to the general pool of money to be re-let out again, and states like New Mexico will be in good position to receive perhaps a second round of funding for these kind of projects.
So in the 1930s, projects involved rural electricity and basic roads and infrastructure. What kind of infrastructure are we looking at now that New Mexico really needs?
A lot of it is similar, basic infrastructure, road construction or repair, water and wastewater systems. In terms of that kind of electric infrastructure that you're talking about, we are looking at what they call smart grid, green grid transmission projects that will both more efficiently distribute electricity, for example, but also include alternative and renewable generation projects, wind, solar, geothermal, a lot of the things that we have those resources here in New Mexico. We'll be eligible for that. We're also doing a big effort on expanding our broadband capabilities throughout the state. So make sure the entire state is broadband capable, particularly schools, libraries, medical facilities. You know, we now have we passed this last legislature a bill encouraging the switch to electronic medical records, for example. All of these things that depend more and more, and our society in general depends more and more on information technology. And so it's an increase in that physical infrastructure as well.
So when you have all these small towns in New Mexico with, for example, broadband, how does it change the lives of the residents of some of these very small towns?
Well, it changes it greatly. You know, from the basic things like having businesses that can now market and sell their wares over the internet, things like that. It has a really big effect on education. You know, when you got kids out in these communities where there may not be a lot of access to, you know, recreational facilities or a lot of entertainment or cultural activities, bringing broadband into these communities can open up the entire world, the possibility for these kids, you know, instructional levels, entertainment levels.
So they can get on their computer if they don't have one at home, in the school or at the library and see what's going on in the rest of the world.
Exactly. For instance, we were just out in the small village of Mosquero, which is about 60 miles southeast of Springer, New Mexico. Literally a town kind of out in the middle of nowhere, you know, out on the high plains in New Mexico. But they have a very vibrant digital media and design program in the high school there that's all based on instruction that they get and capabilities they have through computer and internet access.
Very interesting.
And then one other component of broadband, which is a big emphasis for us here in the state as we compete for some of these federal stimulus funds, is there's a medical component to it as well. In, you know, rural communities, anywhere you go in the state, you'll hear folks saying, God, we don't have access to good medical care, to specialists, behavioral health, you name it. And telemedicine, telehealth, is a way to get, top-class, first-class medicine and medical treatment to these rural communities around the state who really need it. They have to travel hundreds of miles to see a specialist or something. And so you can't do it. You can't do that without broadband. And so there's also that aspect of it as well. And that's,
what does telehealth look like?
Well, it's pretty simple. I mean, basically, you'll have a specialist, a doctor from, who knows, Baltimore, New York, L.A., on a screen with a doctor in your clinic, doing an exam to see what's needed to treat that patient.
So they obviously they can't, you know, feel the lump on the person's arm or stomach or whatever.
That's true. But, you know, that's you can have a nurse even there to do that.
Transmit that information verbally.
They can, but it's, you know, it's a visual and a verbal, you know, exam, in effect. And, you know, I mean, the alternative is for somebody, in, as Eric mentioned, someone in Mosquero to, you know, get out to Amarillo or Dallas or Albuquerque to see a specialist. It's not easy to do in most parts of the state. So the if we can do
heck,
a lot...
It's hard to see a specialist if you live in town.
Yeah, no, it's hard at all. And so telehealth, telemedicine, that's there's the learning component. There's the we know businesses today work, you know, it's just the function of business that you really have to have internet reliable, you know, capacity. But you also have, there's a medical component to it as well. So we're pushing very hard to see that we can get hopefully a few million, $100 million into the state to do broadband out to all parts of it.
Eric, we were talking the other day on this program to an alternative energy person, or I should say renewable energy person, who was talking about the relative merits in terms of solar energy of having solar panels on your house versus having a more centralized kind of solar energy infrastructure. What kind of solar energy projects is the state of New Mexico looking at?
Well, you have what you're talking about is distributed generation, you know, so it's not centralized in one place. You install solar panels on your house. They have micro turbine technology for neighborhoods where, say, a block on a neighborhood would all be, you know, powered off of a micro turbine, stuff like that. The state is looking at every level of that kind of generation project. So we're looking at massive scale wind farms, for example, out on the eastern plains and up north. We're looking at large scale concentrating solar generation down in the south, like around Lordsburg, Deming, where we have some of the best solar resources on the planet actually are down there. So those kind of large scale
solar resources means cloudlessness.
Solar resource, yeah, means 300 days a year of sunshine is what
right.
It means. That's exactly right. And good quality sunshine, because our skies are so clear,
right.
You know, that the radiation comes through. We're looking at that. We also passed, going from that large scale down to the distributed generation on an individual house level, where we just passed a bill this last session that would allow for a financing mechanism to help people pay for installing solar generation panels on their house.
I love that. I know.
Yeah, it's a really good bill. Senator Peter Wirth, Representative Egolf from here in Santa Fe, both co-sponsored that bill.
And is there something in between those two? I mean, I've heard ideas that involve covering large parking lots at airports and shopping centers with solar panels, which would both shade the cars underneath and provide something between huge-scale centralized solar generation and neighbor, like being three solar panels on your house.
Yeah, we're open to anything that makes sense like that, whether it's small, medium, or large-scale generation and distribution. Jim mentioned that a large part of this economic stimulus package consists of competitive grant components. We have an allocation specifically for renewable energy and smart grid technology that we are now in the process of accepting applications for. So,
what does smart grid technology mean?
Smart grid means trying to maximize the efficiency of the transmission of electricity primarily through the transmission grid, so over the power line. So it's a combination of new physical materials, what the lines are made of, how they're constructed, and then also management of power loads over the course of the day. You know, how do you spread out, try to even out as much as possible the power load, power consumption loads, you know, shutting things down that aren't needed. And a lot of it's driven by computer, you know, computer monitoring and kind of, it's almost like traffic flow, but in this case, the traffic isn't cars, it's electrons, and most efficiently organizing the transmission of that energy.
We're talking to Eric Witt and Jim Farrell, both from the governor's office. So the two of you went around the state of New Mexico in this whirlwind tour, showed up in lots of tiny towns, said, "We're from the government and we're here to help you."
Yeah, that
we're here to stimulate you.
We're here to stimulate you. That's even better.
I will say this, you know, Governor Richardson, I think it's well known in the state, is a real he's a real problem solver. He's a real practical fixer of problems, needs that people have in this state. I mean, he's always done it. And, you know, the tour, really, we went into to towns from Rio Rancho to Albuquerque to Fort Sumner to Mascaro and Mora and places I never even heard of, but I'm not from the state either. But, you know, he went in and really asked him, what is it that you need here in your community? Is it water? Is it wastewater? Is it drinking water? Is it the solar technology? Is it schools? Is it whatever it is? I mean, and, you know, we've got an opportunity, unique opportunity, historic opportunity here because of this economic recovery package that's come down from the President and Congress to fix some of these needs at this moment with federal funds. We have a budget shortfall here in the state, so that's cramped our ability to do it. But the governor really went in and asked what folks need most, given the constraints that we have with these funds that we're getting here in the state, just over $3 billion total, to find out what those needs are, and we're going to try to meet them. And he's committed to doing that. So a lot of it was listening, you know. It was a listening tour.
And what did they say? What did you hear?
Well, some of the things the needs for water in this state are overwhelming, obviously, because people need drinking water and people need clean water treatment systems as well. So it was a lot of water, but the range of that was one thing we heard almost everywhere for the most part. But schools, you know, like our public school classrooms have needs.
What were the teachers saying?
Well, the teachers are concerned about the downturn in the economy and the effect it's going to have on revenues, to their ability to keep teachers, add teachers, add programs for kids and so on. You know, there's a lot of capital construction needs that schools have. There was a very wide range of needs. Roads are always a problem. We're a very large rural state. People have, you know, you have to, you know, economies run by, you know, our ability to do commerce and transport people and goods and so on. And so we have a lot of, it's a huge state, as I learned flying to all around the 33 counties. So there's a lot of road needs out there, you know.
Yeah.
But these things I mentioned, I mean, all of these items are priorities in this federal stimulus package. So I think that the governor is in a good position to help. The needs always outstrip the monies available from the feds in this package, but you know, we try to gauge priorities in communities and counties around the state, and the governor will try to meet them.
When you look at the economic crisis, it was really caused by some real problems in big business. You know, the mortgage derivatives, AIG, various other companies doing things that were just terrible business. The whole thing finally came to light. It really wasn't that New Mexico, you know, small towns in New Mexico had or lacked this or that, because we didn't contribute to the problem in the first place. The problem was really a top-down problem. Are we looking at restructuring the economy to be a more bottom-up kind of economy, more small business focused? What's going on?
Well, if I could take a crack at that, this package that we've been out there talking about is not designed to retool the economy per se like that. Those are much broader national and, in fact, global policy discussions that will need to happen. But having said that, a lot of what was asked for when we were out in the economy were economic development projects, helping small businesses, startups, and things that fit into what these broad categories of the stimulus package are. So, for example, wood pellet factories that they want to start, you know, that tie into this renewable energy, you know, alternative energy generation projects, things like that, forest thinning that, you know, that they're doing, and wildland management, things like that. The solar stuff that we're talking about, and other renewable energy, geothermal, wind in particular. And I think there is a recognition that although the current crisis was most immediately precipitated by what you mentioned, Mary Charlotte, the trouble in the financial markets and the banking sectors and things like that, that the reason that the country was so vulnerable to that kind of activity is because we had less diversity in our economy than we had, say, 20, 30 years ago. Manufacturing is largely shipped, you know, over, a lot of it is shipped overseas.
So, and there were so many mergers and acquisitions, hostile and otherwise.
So many M&As, exactly. You see that stuff, and, you know, to where you have now the kind of odd phrase, other than the one that I won't mention.
Which shovel is, ready?
Yeah, which is companies that are now deemed too big to fail. And that required this kind of massive bailout, you know, by the government, because we lacked the diversity, and you had these huge, you know, companies that really are in some cases would be catastrophic were they to go under, you know. But that
catastrophic raised, for whom?
Well, for the people that work there, you know, when you have companies that employ 100,000, 200,000 people that directly and then indirectly through suppliers and the supply chain and the general communities that surround them employ tens if not hundreds of thousands more. You know, entire regions can be devastated. You're seeing in, you know, Michigan right now is in terrible straits, you know, because of what's happened there, you know, in the auto industry in particular. But, you know, they have the double if not triple whammy of the banking collapsing, the housing collapsing,
and
the auto industry collapsing.
And making cars that nobody wants.
That's
another little issue.
Consumer demand, it's exactly right.
And if we go too much in this direction, we'll be talking about something other than New Mexico. So.
Right. So, but going back to here in New Mexico, the stimulus package is meant to have an immediate effect to get us through the short-term most biting effects, you know, of the current economic situation. Hopefully, in the next 18, 24 months, the economy begins to recover. But I think this whole experience has brought to light, or at least to everybody's attention, the need to strengthen the fundamentals of the economy in ways to which you allude. But again, those are regional, national, and global policy discussions that will have to take place among the leaders.
We're talking to Eric Witt and Jim Farrell from Governor Richardson's office about the series of town hall meetings that happened very recently across the state of New Mexico. So we have all this scientific and engineering brain power here in New Mexico, Los Alamos, and other laboratories. Are they, who know a great deal about alternative energy and materials and so on, being called upon to help with some of this, for example, smart grid stuff?
We are. I'll tell you, there's, you know, as Eric said, there's a short-term objective here to create jobs immediately. That's why we're pushing for projects that are ready to go across the country, like roads and bridges and things. But the longer-term thing is, let's use some of these funds nationally to make investments for our long-term health. And one of the most important we can do today is in the area of energy. Get off the fossil fuels, do more solar and renewable, cleaner energies. Here in New Mexico, we are in, I think it's unquestioned, the best position in the country to lead in the area of renewable energy technologies for the future. That's a big priority in this federal stimulus package. We have our great labs. We have our research universities. We have abundant wind, solar. We have geothermal across the state. We have we can do biomass. We have top scientists in the world that are turning algae into oil. We have manure digester projects on the way here in the state to take the waste from our dairy industry and turn it into the purest methane fuel that is available. So basically, our objective here is to present a very strong proposal, and we will, in the next few weeks, to the federal government as part of the stimulus package, to win something we hope on the order of $500 million in order to go out and to put it simply, set up maybe 10 to a dozen microgrid electricity transmission systems. They'll be small, fairly small, self-contained across every part of the state. That'll be fueled by smart technologies, but also wind, solar, whatever is appropriate, and combinations of them. We think that these demonstration projects will be the energy of tomorrow in America and probably in the world. And I don't exaggerate to say that I think that all of that will be developed here in New Mexico in the next period using these federal stimulus funds. So it's very exciting, certainly. And, we have a great opportunity there.
So here we are talking to the general public, especially people in the sort of corridor from Albuquerque to Taos, through especially the greater Santa Fe area. What do you want the public to know and to do?
Well, the listening tour town hall meetings that the governor has just held around the state were somewhat, they were, the general public were certainly welcome, and many, many, many attended. They were a bit targeted to folks who are in decision-making positions right now. I'm talking about often county commissioners, city commissioners, mayors, heads of organizations in areas, renewable energy organizations, and education, you name it, educators, because we wanted to bring them in to say, look, there's $74 billion in competitive grant funds sitting on the table from the feds. You have to go apply for them. It's bureaucratic. There's red tape. There are deadlines. We really wanted to urge decision makers, and the public too, where they can be involved, to go and apply for these $74 billion worth of funds that span the whole range from green energy to you name it. And so that was one of the things. We wanted to, folks have to make themselves aware of decision makers around the state and every community about these opportunities and really to avail themselves of it. So that was one of the other objectives of this tour.
Eric, what did you see when you went to all of these little towns in New Mexico? I mean, part of it was to let people know that they hadn't been forgotten. What are these towns like? I mean, are some of them prospering, or is there a real economic depression going on?
Well, as is typical of the country as a whole, it varied from place to place that we went. We are fortunate in New Mexico in that we do have a fairly diversified economy here. So some parts of the state are doing better than others. Some are genuinely hurting. You go out there and you can see that a good part of the town is boarded up, or that they really need a lot of repair work, things out there, or the economy revolves around a particular industry that may not be doing so well right now, and so that town or that region is hurting.
And it's therefore depressing to live there, and if you're in high school, the first thing you want to do is get out.
Yeah, there are those kind of things. So you mentioned that, and it sounds kind of esoteric, but it's really not, that a lot of what we were trying to accomplish by going around the state and why we visited every single county, and the governor insisted where we could really to go to the most remote places, is to let folks know that they're not alone out there, that these are challenging times, that there is a lot of uncertainty, there's some, level of background anxiety that a lot of people are feeling, but to let them know that, we're here, that we know you're out there, you know how to get a hold of us. As Jim said, for local community leaders and organizations that are applying for funds, it may seem daunting at first when they look at the process for competing for these grants,
right.
But we'll say, look, this is what we do. This is what we're good at. This is how we can help you, and get a hold of that money. And we don't want the money concentrated just in Santa Fe and Albuquerque. We
right.
want it spread out around to the state, parts of the state that don't have the resources, that don't have the diversified base economies, of our larger areas in the state.
You should put stimulus money to sending like 75 artists into each boarded up community. And before you know it, the real estate values will surge up to where the artists can barely afford to live there themselves.
Well, that's happened. We've seen some communities where that's happened in New Mexico. Madrid, that happened there. Carrizozo, it's going on now. Silver City. So, you say that somewhat facetiously, and yet that kind of creative economy is very stimulating to a local region.
Every place I've ever lived, when I got there, it was affordable. When I left, it wasn't.
Well, that's because of you.
We're talking to Eric Witt and Jim Farrell. So anything else that the general public should know before we leave?
Well, I think, I couldn't get off this program without plugging our website.
Yes.
And there is a website. And there's a lot of information for anybody who's interested in this process. And where the money that some of the money's already here, and we're already shovels in the ground, as we say now.
Shovels
in the ground, On some of the road projects, for instance. Some of the arts money. There was some arts money, for instance. That's moving out the door. Water money's moving out the door. But people can be curious about where their tax dollars are going and what projects are benefiting from them here in the state. So that, certainly go look at the website. Here in New Mexico, it's pretty good. We keep it well updated. It's recovery.state.nm.us.
Recovery.state.nm.us.
Or you can just search New Mexico Recovery, and I think it's one of the first one or two.
That's right.
It'll be very interesting. I mean, when you think of recovery as, you know, throwing water onto fertile earth and seeing what grows and making sure that you're really planting seeds that grow, the water might just evaporate, and you got a patch of dirt, or you might reap an incredible harvest. How's that for a metaphor?
Yeah, okay. Let's extend that a little bit. Let's go with that one. And that's a lot of what we're trying to do is be smart farmers. Till the ground wisely, plant the right crops, make sure we conserve the water. You know, lose a lot of it through waste, dissipation in the atmosphere, leakage into the ground. We want to make sure it's channeled where it needs to go, when it needs to go, and how it needs to go.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. Eric Witt is Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Richardson, and Jim Farrell is Policy Advisor to Governor Richardson. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
We're going to take a little break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Karen Rell. She is the Executive Director of Youth Shelters, and we're also joined by Melissa Frank-Williams and Lizzie Lyons from Youth Shelters. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor Charlotte. It's nice for you to have us.
How has the economic situation that we find ourselves in affected homelessness, affected New Mexico's youth, Santa Fe's in particular?
So we're seeing more kids, more local kids in our street outreach. Kids are staying homeless longer.
Street outreach serves about 600 youth a year. 75 to 80% of them are local youth. And with the current economic situation, we're seeing youth who are staying in a homeless situation longer. They are unable to find employment, which prevents them from getting housing or going into a roommate situation. And it's also affecting the families of youth. It makes the life at home a little bit more stressful for everyone, which sometimes falls on the older youth to figure out what they can do to support the family. And that means maybe coming to outreach to get some food, some clothes, and that sort of stuff. They also can come and get support like that there.
And in our shelter, we're seeing kids stay longer because they don't have any place to go, or, again, things are stressful at home. As the pressure of the economic downturn increases, then there's more stress at home.
What are some of the typical family situations that youth come from that need your services?
We see youth from the whole range of things. It's not a specific economic situation. We see youth who have families with parents in very high positions, and then we see youth who are not in the best economic situation, whose families are doubled up or in unsafe housing. We see youth who are in school, who are out of school. We see youth who are Native American, Hispanic, Anglo. We see everyone. And street outreach program specifically is serving youth of a higher age. We serve anyone from their 21st birthday and under, but typically we're serving youth who are 16 to 21.
Okay, they come from across the range of the economic spectrum and so on. What are they coming to you for, or how are they even finding you?
Well, first of all, we have 5 programs, so they come to us for a lot of reasons. So we can, in our street outreach, we can serve them because they've been living out on the streets or they're very marginally housed and they're hungry. They need food, clothing. We serve youth in our shelter because they might have been removed from their homes, or they might have run away, or their home is no longer a viable place for them to be, and they're in our shelter. They come to us for counseling, and in our transitional living program, they come from homelessness, and they can live with us in an apartment for up to 18 months.
They live with you? What kind of facilities are you talking about?
Well, we have a house on Airport Road that used to be our shelter and now is a dormitory-style setting where we house 7 kids, and we're the only transitional living program in northern New Mexico that provides housing for pregnant or parenting teens.
Oh, boy.
And last year we saw about 80 pregnant and parenting teens, they oftentimes come in through our street outreach program.
Is it always the girls who are coming in? When you say parenting teens,
we do see father involvement. We have served 38 young parents, 25 of which are moms, but there are occasionally the supportive father, and we do work with them as well, and we collaborate with other teen parent programs in the community, like Young Fathers and the Teen Parent Center, to provide support for these youth.
It's interesting when you are working on the level, would you call it crisis level or something in that neighborhood?
It's in the trenches, and sometimes kids are in crisis, sometimes kids are... they're all in crisis of one sort or another. It's really the degree of crisis. As far as I'm concerned, if a kid is homeless, they're in crisis.
Right.
They may be managing their homelessness quite well, you know, figuring out places to sleep or whatever. But, it's untenable that we have young people who are from the town of Santa Fe who are homeless or who are sleeping in cars or, you know, kind of jumping from one couch to another and hungry.
So you've said they come from all sorts of families, but what are some of the stories? Like, how did they end up couch surfing or living in their cars or whatever?
One example is a young woman that we met a couple of years ago, and she was about 16 when we met her. She had found out that she was pregnant a couple of months earlier, and her parents were upset with her, and so they asked her to leave and figure out what she could do by herself. So she had some supportive friends. She was couch surfing for a while. When she couldn't find couches, she was sleeping on the street. But when we met her on the street, we gave her a flyer. She came to Street Outreach. We've been able to connect her with our job readiness program, which works with youth to get resumes and all that, and do mock interviewing, get work clothes, talk about how to talk appropriately to your boss. And she was able to find employment, and we were able to hook her up with some supportive housing. And she is now in her own apartment with a healthy, happy baby girl. And she has since reconnected with her family, and they are supporting her, but she's able now to take care of herself and take care of her young child. So.
And then for other people, I suppose there's drugs and substance abuse and things like that involved. Mm-hmm.
Yes. There can be neglect, substance abuse, you know, physical, emotional abuse. Sometimes there's domestic violence, and, the mom might go one direction, the children go another direction. Sometimes, you know, kids are just kicked out or thrown away because the family is broken down. And I mean, I've worked with kids where they've come home and been locked out and there's nobody there and everybody moved away and their stuff was on the front porch.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's why we need to be here in town, and that's why we have this campaign going on right now called Raise the Rent, because our street outreach...
Which isn't what it sounds like.
No, it's raise the money for the rent. It's raise the support. In this economic climate, we've had to make a lot of budget shifts, and you know, we've been generously supported by the city and by this year by Buckaroo Ball. And with the change, of course, in families feeling the economic change, the nonprofit budgets are changing. And so we've started this campaign to raise the rent and to sustain this program, specifically our street outreach program, where homeless kids can come in. It's at 402 St. Francis Drive. They can come in, they can get food, they can get take a shower, do their laundry, get emergency services. We can help them get health care. You know, a lot of the kids that we see haven't been to the doctor in years. We help mothers get find prenatal care. And so it's a really essential grassroots kind of help. And We were fortunate to receive from a generous contribution from the Santa Fe Community Foundation Emergency Fund, which we're kind of using as the seed money to kick off this campaign to raise the rent, which includes the utilities and pay the rent throughout the next year. And We will be talking to the mayor, although I know that the city is, you know, everything's being cut across the board. Yeah, and so, you know, my feeling about all this is that if you don't ask, you know, people don't have an opportunity to, you know, to find it in their pocket, in their heart, to support us. Our goal is about $25,000. We've got, you know, every time we build a little bit, then there's another month of support that we have. And so we're very optimistic that we're going to do this, because every kid in our services is worth the investment. Kids come to us, and, you know, we talk a lot about where they come from, but I want to talk about for a second where they go, mm-hmm. because, you know, we get moms who haven't had any prenatal care, and we get them, you know, over to La Familia or to Healthcare for the Homeless or to, you know, we have a great support system of midwives, and they have wonderful babies and they're beautiful parents. We have kids who come to us who've been homeless for, you know, months and months, who come and they live in our shelter. They get back in school. They get a stable place. They're going to college. They're contributing, and their lives are really turned around.
When I was thinking, you know, you're working there in the trenches and seeing all this real crisis, emergency level stuff that's going on. There's also the question of prevention. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think that if I were working in your position, I would think, where is there sex education? Where are there condoms and birth control education?
We do all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you do it, but I mean, by the time they get to you, it's going to be too late.
On the streets, we're providing condoms and emergency supplies on the street. But one of the important parts about street outreach is having that place for somebody, for our staff to refer that person back to when they contact a youth on the street, and let them know that a doctor can see them at the street outreach center, or that we are running classes on harm reduction for sex and drugs that works with youth on prevention.
Oh, so you really aspect. Are doing the prevention.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. And on site, we provide art groups that are art therapy, and we have access to counselors and doctors, and we're doing other groups. One of the other vulnerable, we've talked a lot about pregnant and parenting youth, one of the other vulnerable populations that we serve is gay, transgendered, and lesbian, bisexual youth. When youth come out to their parents, are highly likely to be kicked out for their sexual orientation, and the national statistics have 20-30% of homeless youth are identify as other than heterosexual.
We're running
a gay straight alliance on Monday afternoons at street outreach, and through the drop-in center and the street program, we serve 600 youth every year, and this is what we expect to serve this year, because having found a building to be in, we've been in this new building at 402 St. Francis for about a year, and since the program has found a home, we've been able to double our numbers. Since we have opened, we've served 1,600. We've had 1,600 youth walk through our door, about 300 of them unduplicated. So we're really seeing a higher level of people coming in now that we have a nice and stable location. And one of our youth came through the door and was getting food out of the kitchen, and he was like, wow, this just feels like it's a safe home. It feels like being at your friend's house, and that's what we're looking for, to make people feel safe when they come there off the streets.
It's tricky, because I would think that it's, by definition, transitional, but once they find, if they've come from unstable lives, once they find that stability, they wouldn't want to ever leave.
You know, we want them to leave, but yeah. We want them to leave with skills and in a safe way. And one of the things that we work really hard on is trying to mend their relationships with adults. Many of the kids that we serve have had difficult relationships with adults. They're wary of therapy. They're wary of adults, the whole nine yards. Oftentimes, people refer to homeless kids as unaccompanied youth, which means that they have no support system.
Right.
So in all of our programs, what we really strive for from day one is to create a relationship with us. So they will come, they will let us assist them, they will help, let us partner with them to change their life.
Do they take more easily to people closer to their age in general?
Again, this is all about the uniqueness of a child. I mean, there's some kids who are definitely looking for a mother figure. Some are looking for peers. Some are looking for grandparents. We have right. an amazing set of volunteers, and we're always looking for new volunteers to continue this program. And it's through our community support and through everybody in the Santa Fe community volunteering and helping provide donations to the street outreach program, whether that be money to help raise the rent or whether that be clothes and food, anything the community can provide is always really helpful.
And I will chime in on that note and let folks know about our website, which is www.youthshelters.org. And on there is our wish list of items that are needed at Street Outreach, but also in our other programs, as well as other ways to donate. We do have a way to donate online. And also our phone number, which is 505-983-0586. Folks can call there as well. And volunteer information is on the website, as well as the application.
If somebody wanted to come and cook a meal, for example, and bring some food, they could just do that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We
don't have a kitchen for preparing food at our street outreach. But if someone was interested in delivering food, or we have a program actually on another site in our emergency shelter where we actually have a cooking program, and if they were interested in being involved in that, they could certainly come and do that. We have all kinds of people that do wonderful volunteering, from a computer tech to someone who cooks to someone who has this great acumen for playing ping pong and having great storytelling time with kids.
Right.
And recently at Street Outreach, another way that the kids have sort of made the new building a home is we had a couple of volunteers from the community and a couple of our kids work together to make a really nice garden at Street Outreach. And so we're hoping to be giving out some organic fresh garden vegetables come the fall. So we're really
sometimes it's things like that that make all the difference.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That connection yes. to living things.
It's a connection, yeah.
Yeah. So you were talking about where people go. Do they sometimes, I mean, you've been around for a while, do they sometimes
years.
Come back and and work with the next generation or the next crop of kids?
One of the stories that we recently had was a youth who was previously at the shelter at a younger age, and some things happened, and he ended up in front of our door looking for shelter. And he, at that point, was too old to be at our youth shelter, which only serves up to 17. But we were able to get him housed in our transitional housing program. And since then, he's participated in a lot of our programs, like workforce development and in our Street Smart program. And he's able to stay there and working on school and that sort of stuff. So we have been able to support kids who, after the shelter, have gotten apartments or have moved on later in life to get apartments. And then, with the economy the way it is, some of our kids have lost jobs that have kept them stable for the last year and have come back to Street Outreach since they know where it is and they're able to find food and that support to keep them going and until they can find employment again. So,
well, the other thing about it is that our programs are really set up on a continuum, in that First Contact Street Outreach is called First Contact Street Outreach because lots of times that's what happens. And we do have youth that come in and they will start off and then they may go to transitional living or they may go to the shelter and then transitional living. And so that's really the model from which we operate, is to really provide a system that provides that long-term safety and stability for youth.
So if people want to contact you, they can go to youthshelters.org. Mm-hmm. They can call 983-0586. Anything else you want to let people know about or just making a call to the public right now?
I think reminding people that we started with the conversation with the economy. This is a really important time, and people are really facing some hardships with money, and this is a time when more people are one paycheck away from homelessness, and it's definitely affecting the youth. And we're hoping that everybody supports our program and helping raise the rent so that youth have a safe place to access for food and clothes and support and mentorship by caring staff and volunteers.
And we're all hoping that the stimulus programs work all over the country and in New Mexico. But if they don't work real fast, or they don't work in every way, and there's still these problems, this is something ongoing for people to think about, yes. Not only in the weeks, but the years to come.
Yes, exactly.
Karen Rowell, Melissa Frank Williams, and Lizzie Lyons, thank you so much for being with us on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz.